All right. Are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
Good to go.
What's wrong?
Okay. Hey, y'all. I'm Carrie.
Hey, y'all. I'm Mandy.
And this is Monstrous. This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners and may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised. All right. We are here after a really long day.
Yeah.
But we're here. I'm going to try to get this edited and out at our normal time tomorrow. But if it is a little bit late, I'm sorry, guys. It's been a very long day.
Long and hot.
Yeah. We had Daxon's birthday party today. We were out at the lake all day in like 100 degree weather. So it's been a long day. And it was humid as hell.
With the heat index, it said it was 105.
God. Yeah, if it wouldn't have been so humid, I don't think it would have been so bad.
It wouldn't have been that bad, no.
No. Then I ended up with a freaking headache.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long day. But we're here. We're going to muscle through it. We're going to get it recorded and get it out. It just might be a little later than normal.
Right.
All right. So we are officially 6 weeks away from the official start of spooky season.
That's crazy.
Which I cannot wait to get my Halloween decorations up.
I know. Same here.
So excited. I told Mama if Mike would let me put them out right now, they would already be up in my yard. Just saying.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I can't wait till I get my... It's like that giant skeleton. I think it's like 8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait to get that. I told Mike that thing's going to go up and it's going to stay up all year low.
Damn.
Well, because it's so big, you have to like anchor it to your house.
Wow.
Yeah, it has like strings that stick off of it and you anchor it to your house because it's huge.
Damn.
You know that house here in town that has, as you're coming down the main street, that has like 3 or 4 Jeeps sitting out there?
Mm-hmm.
They used to have one.
Mm.
Right on the front of their house. And it was anchored to that little deck thing that they have on the second level.
Mm-hmm.
It was anchored to that. It was up all year long. During summertime, they put a floaty on it.
Oh, wow.
And then for Christmas, it had like a Santa hat. I told Mike, that's what we'll do.
That's what I do.
Well, the thing is $300.
Oh, God.
I'm going to get my use out of it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put it up for 2 months and that's it. It's going to go up. And I want to put ours like peeking around the side of the house.
That'd be cute.
Mike was like, if I wake up and I see that thing looking through our bedroom window, I'm going to lose my shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway. Sorry, guys. Okay. Move on. So in the spirit of pre-spooky season, we've got a couple pre-spooky season episodes that are coming up. There are a couple mysteries. Because who doesn't love a good mystery?
Right.
The whoo of it all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this week, I've got one that I'm pretty sure everyone has heard of before. And then next week, I have one that's similar to this one, but it's much less known. That was not the right way to say that, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So are we ready to get into it today?
I'm ready.
Okay. So the earth is full of mysteries that no one can explain. We all know that. All of these are mysteries that have baffled and even scared the military, scientists, researchers, and the everyday person. Biggest of these being the open ocean.
Mm.
Millions of people around the world are scared of the ocean. It's actually a pretty common fear. In fact, 4% of Americans alone are afraid of the ocean.
Damn.
Right? Like, I know people are scared of the ocean, but I didn't realize it was that many.
Right.
So, if 64% of America is afraid of the open ocean, could you imagine how many of the billions of people on Earth are?
Oh, I bet.
So, this phobia is called, I'm totally going to say this wrong, thalassophobia, I think is how you say it. That is the fear of sea. And although I grew up less than 6 hours from the ocean and going on trips there every year, throughout the year, different times, it is a valid fear. Because thousands of people die in the ocean every year. Then you add the fact that 80% of the world's ocean has not been explored, seen, or even touched by humans. Totally makes sense for someone to be afraid of it. In fact, there are parts of the ocean that are so deep, light doesn't even reach it.
Damn.
Right. So who knows what the fuck is down there?
Mm-hmm.
There have been bodies, strange, mysterious animals, animals believed to have been extinct, ships, planes, and even underwater cities all found inside the vast ocean.
Right.
Mandy's shaking her head, guys.
That's wild.
So who is to say that there isn't an evil dark presence also lurking under the dark, cold, salty water that is the ocean? So today we are going to talk about the mystery that is the Bermuda Triangle.
That's a good one.
So nearly everyone has heard the stories about the triangle, but you've probably never heard of it like this. So I'm going to give you everything that I could find about the weird, mysterious triangle. And it's a lot because there's a ton out there. There's probably even more than what I have. So, everyone, let's dust off our water wings and get ready because we're going to dive into the ocean and all of its spookiness. So, the Bermuda Triangle is also known as the Devil's Triangle. It's located right in Hurricane Alley, and it's a huge chunk of ocean with three separate points. Obviously, it's a triangle. So, even though there's no official bounds of the triangle, if you look it up on a map, it shows, like I said, three points. These are located at Miami, Florida, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and the island of Bermuda. And the triangle, are you ready for this? Covers 500,000 square miles of ocean.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Way bigger than I thought it was.
Right.
Massive. Due to all the hurricanes off the coast of Miami, there are a ton of treasure that's found. This treasure includes from the Portuguese galleons, and those, they've just sunk into the ocean. And because the hurricanes are, you know, crazy and powerful, it brings it all up, and you can find it all throughout Miami on the beaches, which is just crazy.
Right.
That'd be some shit.
Mm-hmm.
So this triangle has always existed, but it wasn't named the Bermuda Triangle until the infamous Flight 19 happened, which was in 1964, and that was when a magazine article printed the mysterious story, and then the name just kind of stuck. So this is one area of the world that has always been a mystery. It's brought tragedy to many people, and it's somewhere that has caused many things to just vanish. So I've got five fun facts about the triangle to tell you. First, Christopher Columbus had mentioned the triangle in his writings as he passed through it, noting the magnetic anomalies that caused the compass on his ship to go crazy and it would not find north. In these journals, he wrote also that the stars above in the sky seemed to move. Which leads us to fun fact number two. When compasses go through the triangle, they don't point towards magnetic north. Instead, they point true north. So the difference in these norths are that true north is the direction of the geographic North Pole, which is the point where the Earth's rotational axis intersects the surface. So it's a fixed point on the globe. It does not change. While magnetic north is the direction that a compass points to as it aligns with the Earth's magnetic field. This magnetic North Pole is less stable than the geographic North Pole, and so it shifts over time as a response to the changes in the Earth's core. Compasses are not made to point true north, but when they go through this triangle, that's the direction that they point. So it's, I don't know, it's weird. Now, number three is that the Bermuda Triangle is inconveniently next to the most popular shipping lanes.
Huh.
So there's a ton of ships that go through this area. Number four is the Bermuda Triangle is home to the Puerto Rico Trench, which is the deepest point of the Atlantic Ocean, and it reaches the depths of 27,493 feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of fucking water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, lastly, there is a minimum of 1,000 people that have died inside the Bermuda Triangle over the last century. And to be honest, there's probably been more than that. That's just what's been recorded. That is a lot of people to die in one area over 100 years.
It really is.
So as most people know, There are a ton of theories out there about what causes the triangle to be what it is. And before we get into the crazy paranormal reasons, I've got some natural slash scientific reasons for what could possibly be going on here. So for scientists, the triangle most likely isn't as mysterious as people believe it to be. The triangle has a very powerful current that runs through it, many believing it to be the most strongest current in the world. That is the Gulf Stream. And this can cause extreme rapids in the ocean and can even cause the weather to change, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I've never known a current could change the weather.
Mm-mm.
That's weird. But apparently it does. The Gulf Stream is the stream that takes water from the Gulf of Mexico through the Atlantic Ocean and then into the Norwegian Sea. So this could be a reason to why a lot of the ships are dragged and then pushed way off course and even drug under the rapids, which, okay, that's possible, but it does not account for all of them, nor does it account for the planes. So this takes us to our next explanation, which is methane gas. So it's been proven that there are methane gas leaks inside the triangle, and it kind of like bubbles up in certain areas, and then those bubbles rise to the surface and cause like a suction. And then that suction goes up through the water and then they burst, which kind of creates, I guess, like a tunnel. And then the methane gas can cause the water to become more dense, which then causes it to be harder for the boats to stay afloat. Because if the object on top of the water is more dense than the water or liquid below it, it's going to sink, not float. Some believe that these high methane gas levels and the high density of the methane in the atmosphere is also part of the plane disappearances as well, which causes the pilots to experience delusions. But unlike ships, the pilots aren't breathing in the air that's outside. So I'm not sure how responsible that would be.
Right.
Could it cause some issues? Yes. But I don't think it has. I don't think there's any way to say it's responsible for everything. Then not only that, wouldn't there be evidence? I mean, if a giant ship is sucked underwater, wouldn't there be something to show for it?
You would think so.
Right. So there's that. Then there are others that believe there's a high iron presence that was left behind from a volcano that erupted in the area. And this iron content throws the magnetic fields off, which messes with the compasses. Okay, that's possible. So then if we're going to go with that and say, okay, the high iron messes with the compasses and they don't know which direction to go. Then the ship got drugged down or it crashed. Where's the evidence of that? I mean, look at the Titanic, okay? The Titanic sunk. We know what happened with that. But there was evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
There should be something, but there isn't.
You would think.
Right. Then there are also rogue waves that happen. They just come out of nowhere and just wipe everything out. So essentially with this, some believe that these giant waves just appear and then have the ability to reach up to 100 feet and take out these ships. So this theory says that these waves are big enough and powerful enough to destroy all evidence of planes and ships. But for a few of the cases I'm going to tell you about, there's no proof of this happening. Not only that, planes fly higher than 100 feet in the air. I don't think a wave is going to be able to get that high.
Mm-mm.
But I don't know. I'm not a waveologist. So the biggest scientific reason, and probably the most believable, is navigational error. So according to the USCG, which is the United States Coast Guard, they say the main reason for all of the boats and planes that have disappeared come down to imminent weather, unsafe conditions, and the vehicle itself. They say that because there are so many storms that line up with the triangle's disappearances, like major tropical storms and hurricanes. But the biggest issue is that when the vehicle goes missing, there's no trace left behind. Where the fuck are they going if they're just crashing? The next natural theory is magnetic fluctuation. So the Earth's magnetosphere is a layer of the Earth that is formed with the interaction of the sun and then the Earth's magnetic field and solar wind. So there's a region that is near South America and the Gulf of Mexico where the Earth is less protected and it can be affected by excess radiation, and incorrect readings are very common in this area. They see lower radiation in lower parts of the atmosphere here than anywhere else. So as a side note, apparently there's radiation all up in our atmosphere. We're just breathing that shit in, apparently. So according to them, this could be why so many of the crafts get lost in the area. But to quote an article that about this, it is more than likely that they have had bad behaviors of reading of their instruments, causing a drift in navigation that would take them out to or leave them without fuel in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So with this, they're basically saying that although this magnetic displacement from the sun is present, it probably isn't, nor is the radiation, because it's not enough to cause this many navigational errors. And that this is most likely caused by either the equipment or people just misreading their equipment. Again, where are the ships and the pieces?
They just disappeared.
Where are the people? Right. Like, okay, so now this really became so the Bermuda Triangle has always been there, like I said. But it really became to like the forefront, and people really started putting everything together after Flight 19 happened, which we'll get into that. So this was when people really began to connect, you know, all the ships and the planes and just all the weird shit around the triangle, because many planes and many ships have gone missing with no trace left behind. And it was Flight 19 that really kind of set this whole mysterious thing off. So now, not everything that passes through the triangle disappears. Okay, we know that. Things go through the triangle now every single day. But there's been a lot of things to just vanish. The last natural theory I have for you, I don't believe this one at all, is water spout. A water spout is a column of rotating air that forms over water. So basically, it's a tornado over the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are usually only a few feet wide and usually only last up to 20 minutes. But they have been reported to get up to a few hundred feet wide and last for over an hour and have winds that are up to 260 miles an hour. But this size is not common. And even though they can get this big, they are able to overturn ships. They can pose a threat to planes, along with causing, you know, drowning hazards due to the wind, rough waters, debris being thrown around. The likelihood of this causing all the planes and ships to just completely vanish with nothing left behind is a very small possibility. Because even with like a tornado on land, you still have evidence that it was there. So I'm not so sure about this one. This next part you're going to love. We're going to dive into the paranormal explanations for the Bermuda Triangle. Some of these are crazy.
Oh, I bet.
So first is the belief that the lost city of Atlantis is underneath the triangle.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So scientists have spent years looking for an explanation here. And in doing so, they have scanned the triangle and found a, quote, grid-like sections that may look like streets of a small town. But it's over 100 miles wide, and it's located in a spot that is, quote, northwest of the Canary Islands in the Atlantic Ocean, and is located at coordinates 31, 15, 15 north, 24, 15, 30. So that's the longitude and latitude of where it's located. Many people claim that Atlantis is for sure in the Bermuda Triangle, and that it's using its crystal pyramid to make the ships disappear. And There's no actual evidence of this, okay? But it's been believed for a very long time by many that Atlanteans were said to have had a very large crystal that was filled with a ton of energy. It's basically a giant battery. And it's believed that this crystal may have had the power to pull ships down and even planes all the way to the bottom of the ocean if it crossed over that beam.
Hmm.
Which, okay. Wouldn't we see the beam, though? Like, if
you
it was a light?
You would think.
Right. But maybe it's not a light. I don't know. I know. People are going to think I've lost it, okay? I have not. I promise. before anybody says that I've done fallen off my rocker completely. I'm not, I promise. It is possible that Atlantis was a real place. And many people believe that it was real.
It could be. Or it could have been.
The Little Mermaid came from somewhere.
Right.
And the town or the city in which mer people live in came from somewhere. So the stories that we have of Atlantis today come from the writings of Greek philosopher Plato. Among the many books that he wrote, there was one that was about a perfect civilization, what he called a utopia of half god and half humans, and he called it Atlantis. It was a huge island in the Mediterranean, which was almost 1 million square miles. The Atlantis Empire was made up of a bunch of smaller islands that had, like, you know, moats and canals in between each of them. So, kind of like Venice, which is also a sunken city, by the way. Now, the island of Atlantis was said to be lush, green, beautiful, and full of exotic animals. And it was a pretty advanced civilization as well. Like, they were said to have running water, electricity before electricity was even found for us. Basically, everything that we have today and are just discovering today, Atlanteans were said to have already had it. Right, which, maybe. I mean, look at the pyramids in Egypt.
Right.
Where them fucking things come from.
Right.
It was said that they had a racetrack for horses that surrounded the entire island. They had a strong naval base for their godlike warriors, and they basically dominated the Mediterranean Sea. They were said to be all around good people, that they were pure of heart and moral. But as we all know, nothing lasts forever. And their pure moral hearts eventually became immoral. And according to the Greeks, they got greedy. And the legend says that Zeus saw this and he was like, no, we're not doing that. You know, you're bad people now. And so he cursed the land. With that curse, he brought big earthquakes, firestorms, and just complete chaos. While all this is happening, the ground is slowly splitting apart beneath them, and the ocean around them is getting higher and higher, and eventually swallowed them up whole. Now, for anyone that does not know Plato or his writings, he loved to combine fact and fiction. So knowing this, it's hard to say what part of his stories about Atlantis is fact and what is fiction. But we do know that during this time, people were terrified of angering the gods. And they believed that natural disasters were punishments from the gods. So there is a good chance that some of what Plato wrote about Atlantis is real and that some of it is fiction. Now, there are a ton of people that have spent their lives searching for Atlantis. Explorers have looked in the ocean all around Scandinavia, Spain, Greece, and the Canary Islands. And it's possible that they could have already found it. There have been a lot of sunken cities, and any one of them could be Atlantis, because there is proof that entire villages, cities, and islands have just sunk. For ancient Greek civilizations, this was a common occurrence. Between earthquakes, tsunamis, and volcanic eruptions, entire civilizations were completely wiped out. This includes Pompeii and Crete, and even the ancient city of Alexandria, which was a full city in Egypt that now sits underwater.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and you can get on Google and Google pictures, and there's pictures of these cities under the ocean. Right. Then, even today, they're still finding new islands out there. Like, there was one just found off the coast of Greenland in 2021. And because of Plato's habit of combining fact and fiction, it may not look as what we think it did. I mean, if there are other islands out there that are under the ocean that have sunk, couldn't one of them be Atlantis? And because of Plato's habit of exaggerating the truth, couldn't any one of them be Atlantis?
Could be.
Which, we're going to cover Atlantis at some point. It's on my list. Because there's so much more about it than that. There's so many reasons to believe that it actually does exist. So it's on there. We're going to cover it. So the next idea that we have for the reason behind Bermuda Triangle are aliens.
Oh, God.
Every mystery comes back to the aliens. Mandy's just shaking her head.
I'm not big on this alien theory stuff.
God. Well, I don't know. It's kind of, maybe. I don't know. Mm-mm. I'm on aliens, okay? But maybe. Well, I don't know. Who? I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, so the triangle is right next to America. An area that is heavily populated with ships, planes, and people. But the triangle, again, is 500,000 square miles. So it's a very large, extensive area, and many parts of it is very isolated. So now in my research and digging, I have found 5 very popular ideas regarding the alien theory. And for the most part, they all kind of intersect with each other. So one, there have been a large number of UFO sightings reported within the Bermuda Triangle area. Next, which this one was actually used for a plot line for a few episodes in American Horror Story.
Nice.
So it's just great. Have you ever watched that show?
I've watched a couple of them, but I haven't got into it.
Oh, I love that show. I fucking love that show. It's great. I finally got caught up. I love it. But yeah, they used this plot line for a few of those episodes. So this one says that President Eisenhower made a deal with the aliens to let them abduct people in exchange for technology.
This hurts my head. Oh, God. Okay.
Which this one is directly connected to number 3, which says that the triangle is a hunting ground for aliens and that they use this area to fill their, quote, quota that Eisenhower allowed them to have. So, like, you can abduct this many people every year. And this is the area in which they do that.
Okay.
Next. So the next one is that there is a military base near the triangle, and aliens use this base to report their abductions, their experiment findings, and hand over the technology that they have agreed to give us.
That's so dumb.
Lastly, pilots and sailors go missing all the time, and there's never any trace of them ever found. They're never heard from again, which ties into the alien abductions. Where the fuck else would they be going? Now, like I said earlier, Christopher Columbus wrote in his journals that the stars seem to be moving, and this has led many to believe that he wasn't seeing stars, but was instead seeing UFOs.
So stupid.
Oh. Hey, whenever there's no explanation, I mean, you gotta have some
alien.
Kind of explanation.
It always goes to
what? That's the easiest one.
Oh, Jesus.
Everybody. It's aliens or Bigfoot every time. We're in the ocean. Bigfoot can't get out there, so it's gotta be aliens.
So dumb. Whatever. Whatever.
You know what's gonna be funny is if the government ever comes out and says, oh, yeah, aliens are real, they're here, you're going to be like, I was fucking stupid.
If that ever comes out, I will admit that I was dumb for not believing, if that ever comes out.
See, I have my own belief. I just don't think it's little green men that are flying around on plates.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Now, at the point that he's seen these, right, this is from his journal, he called his crew out to see the sky and, like, are you seeing what I'm seeing kind of thing. Then he says that all of a sudden a glowing object came out of the water and shot up towards the sky.
No.
I wish you guys could see Mandy right now.
Whatever.
Oh, it's great. Okay. So these accounts are the first known accounts of someone seeing something weird happening within the triangle's waters.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, I'm going to note here, Christopher Columbus was also a character that liked to exaggerate things. So I'm just going to throw that out there. He was flamboyant on his accounts of things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's lying. I'm just saying that has been proven. So do with that with what you will. Now, there are others that believe the triangle is a portal, but instead of being one that leaves our world, instead, it's one that allows aliens to come to our world.
This is stressing me out.
Do you want to go to Bermuda, Mandy?
No, I'm good.
Okay, now the last two theories I have are kind of crazy, but I guess they could be possible because we really don't have a clue. Mm-mm. We really don't. So the first one is the thought that the Bermuda Triangle sits on top of a portal to another dimension. The last one is very similar, but instead of just being a portal to another dimension, it says that the triangle sits on top of a wormhole that sucks you in and takes you to a different space and time. In a book written by Bruce Jernan, he claims something like this happened to him. To sum it up, he says that he and his father were flying through the triangle and they flew around like a dark donut-shaped cloud. And that as soon as they got through the cloud, they became enveloped by a fog. And the further they went into it, the darker it got. He said it was full of flashing lights, not like lightning, but flashing lights, like almost like LED lights. And they decided that the best way to go through was to turn around and just go back the way that they came in. So they turned around and flew back out. He said as they flew out of the cloud, the fog turned into like long horizontal lines. And the further out they flew, the farther they seemed to get away from those lines. And eventually they completely disappeared.
Trippy.
He believes that this was in fact a portal to another dimension or another realm. He said that as they flew through it, their compasses lost their ability to work, that they became disoriented, and that he felt a sickness fall over him. Now, his story has changed a few times. In one instance, he claimed that he actually did see aliens, but then in another, he said he didn't see any at all. So his story is kind of flip-floppy. So we kind of have to take his account with a grain of salt because we don't know, but it is strange. Who knows? Okay, so now that we've gotten through all of that, I've had my laugh, and you now have a headache.
Yeah, very much so.
Are you ready to dive into some of these mysterious disappearances?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. There's a lot more out there than what I have here, but these I think personally are the best ones. They're crazy. So first we're going to talk about planes. The first one is the infamous Flight 19. One of the main theories to what happened to this these planes is that the pilots just got disoriented, ran out of gas, and then just crashed into the ocean. But I'm not so sure this is what happened. Because we're not talking about one plane. We're talking about a fleet of 5 military planes. Right. So on December 5th, around 2 p.m., a plane crew of 5 planes that were TBM Avenger torpedo bombers took off from Fort Lauderdale in Florida. As a whole, they were known as Flight 19. They were conducting an exercise known as Navigation Problem 1. How ironic is that?
Right.
Now, according to the History Channel, the flight's triangular flight plan, called for them to head east from the Florida coast and then conduct a bombing run at Hens and Chickens Shoals. They would then turn north and proceed over the Grand Bahamas Island and then fly southwest back to base. That was their flight plan. Now, with the exception of one plane that only carried 2 men, each of these planes carried 3. So there was 14 men in total between the 5 planes. Most of these men had logged about 300 hours of airtime, so they knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So the flight leader was Lieutenant Charles C. Taylor. He was an experienced pilot, and he was a veteran of several combat missions in World War II. So his fleet of pilots took off, and they dropped their bombs on the Hens and Chicken Shoal around 2:30 p.m. They then began to make their way back. And this was when Lieutenant Taylor became convinced that for some reason, the compass was not working and that it was reading wrong, which had them flying in the wrong direction. The other men also had no idea where they were and thought that they may have gotten lost at their last turn. Now, eventually it got serious because it got later and later, and they got more and more confused about where they were. The History Channel said that another naval flight instructor, Lieutenant Robert F. Cox, who at the time was flying near the Florida coast, was the first to overhear the patrol's radio communications. He immediately informed the air station of what was going on and then contacted the Avengers to see if they needed any kind of assistance. Taylor responded to Cox that both of his compasses were out, and that he was trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Taylor had told him that he was overland, but it was broken. So it was like islands. Cox said that he sounded very anxious while also telling him that he believed they were over the Keys, but he didn't know how far down the Keys they were located. Now, Taylor's claims to be over the Keys made everyone confused because the plan was, like I said, to pass over the Hen and Chicken Shoal in the Bahamas less than an hour before. And now he was saying that he thought the planes had somehow drifted hundreds of miles off the coast and ended up in the Florida Keys. It's a huge distance to cover.
Right.
In less than an hour. Now, Charles Taylor was 27 years old. He had been transferred to Fort Lauderdale from Miami. And since all of this, many speculated that he could have just gotten confused by some of the islands in the Bahamas for the Keys. Which I could see that happening. Now, I do want to note here that during this time, pilots not only use their compasses for direction, but they also use the horizon. And this is just as important as all of their other tools. But it can be difficult and can be confusing because the sea and the sky, for the most part, are the same color. So, could have been a huge part of why he was so confused. Now, normally, when something like this happens, pilots are taught to fly west to use the sun as navigation towards the mainland. But Taylor was convinced that they had somehow gotten into the Gulf of Mexico and needed to instead head northeast towards Florida. Some of the other pilots noticed this mistake and radioed to him saying that, you know, let's just fly west and that'll get us home. Now, eventually, they did manage to get Taylor to turn around and go west. But just after 6 p.m., he kind of lost his shit again when he canceled the orders and decided to change direction again and go northeast. He told his team that they didn't go far enough east. Like, we didn't go far enough, let's turn around. It's weird. So some investigators think that one of the planes may have broke off and flown in a different direction, and that they may have eventually crashed, but there's not any proof of that. It's just kind of like speculation. So whether one pilot broke off or not, we know that at least three of the other planes followed their commander's lead. Flight 19's radio transmission soon became more and more faint. And in these transmissions, it's heard that when the planes began to get low on fuel, Taylor began to prep all of them for a crash landing. He was heard saying that when the first plane drops below 10 gallons, they would all go down together. Then, a few minutes later, the Avengers lost radio communication and it was replaced by static. So following this, the Navy searched for the presumed wreckage. They figured they crashed. This search party went on for 5 days. They combed through more than 300,000 square miles of territory with no results at all.
Wow.
Navy Lieutenant David White recalled that they had hundreds of planes looking for the wreckage. They searched land and water for days without ever finding any body or any debris.
Just disappeared.
Yep. 14 men who knew what they were doing, who knew how to fly these planes, just vanished, along with all traces of all 5 planes.
That's wild.
Right? Mouth's kind of dry. Let me get a drink. So next is a story about a man named Bruce Gernon. This man flew through the Bermuda Triangle in 1970. This trip was only supposed to last an hour and a half. But part of the way through the flight, he flew through a cloud and then everything just went black. His equipment stopped working, and when he tried to steer the plane and adjust his controls, the plane wouldn't respond. Then suddenly everything went back to normal. The sun came back, the sky was clear, and the plane went back to normal functioning order. Now, he may have overlooked this if it wasn't for what happened next. He reached his destination in Miami in record time. And like, he didn't just arrive just a little bit early. He landed in Miami in only 45 minutes.
Holy shit.
A flight that should have taken a total of 90 minutes, at least. At the minimum, 90 minutes, was somehow cut short by 45 minutes. He somehow sped through time to arrive 45 minutes early without any explanation as to how he had done it. But he had one thought as to how. So although there was and still is no proof of it, Bruce thought that he may have teleported almost 100 miles further into his route. So now we're going to go back in time about 22 years to December 28th of 1948. So this was when a Douglas DC-54 aircraft disappeared while traveling from Puerto Rico to Miami. An investigation into this concluded that there was not enough information to determine the cause, and there has never been any trace of the plane or any of the 32 people on board ever found.
Oh, wow.
All just gone.
Just disappeared.
Yep. Now, the last plane I have is more recent. On February 23rd, 2017, the Turkish flight TK-183 was forced to reroute its direction while traveling from Cuba to the Washington Dulles Airport after they began to have mechanical and electrical problems once they went through the triangle. There are more planes that have been rerouted and strange things that have happened or just vanished than what I just told you. But now we're going to move on to the ships. The ships have had some similar things happen, and I've got at least one that you're going to be like, what the fuck? Yeah. So first I have the USS Pickering. This ship was commissioned on August 22nd, 1798. It was 77 feet long and weighed about 190 tons. The USS Pickering was a Navy ship used during the quasi-war with France. Then, after some back and forth during the war, the ship arrived in Boston on May 17th of 1800. She sat and remained there until June 10th when they sailed out to patrol the area between the Bermuda and Cape Hatteras in North Carolina. Then, on July 21st, the ship returned to Delaware and then was ordered to join a squadron in the West Indies. So the USS Pickering set sail for the last time on August 20th, 1800. It's believed that she was lost in battle, but it's never been proven, and no trace of the USS Pickering has ever been found.
That's crazy.
Yep. The next one is the USS Wasp. These ships have some crazy names.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a 14,700-ton, 831-foot slope of a warship. And it was built in Newport, Massachusetts, and was then commissioned in early 1814. And just so everyone knows, sloop is a type of ship. So this ship had a brief but distinguished career. This was marked by its battle with an MS Reindeer, and the capture prize ended sometime after September 21st of 1814. When the Wasp captured an 1830 brig, the ship was filled with a prize crew under the commission of midshipman David Gisner. Okay, and I know it's a lot of ship talk, guys. It's confusing. I'm sorry. A lot of it I myself do not understand. Okay. We just got to get through it. I'm sorry. So he, his crew, and the ship left the Wasp Company on the 22nd and then reached Savannah, Georgia in early November. This would be the last American sighting of the USS Wasp. Now, throughout the first half of 1850, several newspapers had reported rumors of sightings of the Wasp, and one had even claimed that the ship had been captured by the British. But the Wasp was never returned home, and it soon became apparent after the War of 1812 had ended that the ship had not been captured, but instead it had vanished at sea. Now, in June of 1825, an article in the Niles Weekly Register had said there was a tale off the coast of Africa that may have been about the Wasp. The tale told of survivors of a whaling wreck that happened in November of 1824. But this tale was then and now highly debated. In its history of the Naval War of 1812, Theodore Roosevelt said about this ship, quote, "How she perished, no one ever knew. All that is certain is that she was never seen again." So there are a bunch of theories out there about the Wasp. Some people think that it vanished inside the Bermuda Triangle, and some people think that it was captured. Others think that it was turned into a whaling ship, but no matter the theories or beliefs, no one had ever, for sure, found out what happened to the wasp. And that's because it vanished while in the triangle with nothing left behind. It was in ton right. fucking ship. Just gone.
Just vanished. Okay.
Okay. So the next one is a big one. And this one is talked a lot about, just like Flight 19 is. So the USS Cyclops was also a naval ship. And its final mission was to transport shipments of 900 and 960 tons of coal from Norfolk, Virginia to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Then back to Virginia with 1,100 tons of magnesium. This shit is extremely flammable for anyone that is not aware. In fact, when you burn magnesium, it burns as hot as the sun.
Damn.
Yeah, and they have 1,100 tons of it. So the Cyclops departed on January 19th, 1918. It arrived in Rio de Janeiro on the 20th, where she stayed for 2 weeks unloading and loading cargo. Then on February, 309 people departed Brazil with their magnesium headed back home with only one scheduled stop in Baltimore, Maryland. 2 days later, at 1800 hour military time, so 6 p.m. normal people time, on February 22nd, the ship embarked for Maryland, and it was expected to arrive on March 13th. The last known location was an unplanned stop made in Barbados on March 3rd, with 1800 nautical miles left to go on their 4,844 nautical mile journey. So they were less than halfway.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they stopped in Barbados and they were not supposed to. Now, after their unscheduled stop in Barbados, the passengers and crew were never seen again.
Damn.
Right. So there were some rumored sightings, like one on March 9th off the coast of Virginia, but investigations proved that this was impossible, because the ship was not scheduled to be back in Baltimore until the 13th. And her speed had been reduced to about 240 nautical miles per day due to an issue with the engine and then the weather. So she could not have been there. They would have actually arrived home later because they had to slow down. So it's speculated that the ship didn't just vanish. One officer, Kennard A. Neving, who was transferred from the ship in Rio, had recounted his experience on the ship later. So he was on the ship. Then once they got to Rio de Janeiro, he was transferred off. So he wrote in 1969 that the ship was problematic and the crew was concerning. Yep. He described the commanding officer as a rough, eccentric salt of the old school, given to carry a cane, but preceded few cultural amenities. I don't know what that means, but it does not sound good. He said that the commanding officer was a very indifferent seaman and that he was a poor and overly cautious navigator. He also said that the commanding officer was unfriendly and he was genuinely disliked by the other officers and men.
Damn.
Right. He goes on to recount an incident where one of the engines had turned over while a sailor was nearby. And the force of the propeller drew the boat in, knocking the sailor overboard and then causing him to drown. Neving blamed the captain for this because he created a, quote, thoroughly demoralizing and disorganized crew because of his irrational methods of command.
Well,
right. Now, the ship was reportedly lost in the Bermuda Triangle, and Richard Winner investigated this in his documentary titled The Devil's Triangle. In this, he suggested that a failed mutiny and implemented that there was a problem on the ship. So it's been rumored that the crew had mutinied against the captain. But if this had happened, where are they and where did the ship go? Other theories range from a magnesium explosion to the ship capsizing all the way. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
To a giant octopus rising up from the ocean and dragging the ship down to the bottom.
Oh my God. That's worse than a damn alien.
while others speculate that the ship was sunk by a German U-boat. Okay, so possible, but post-war records indicate there were not any U-boats in this area. So that couldn't have been what happened.
Right.
Another theory says that they were operating with a single engine because the cylinder had broke. And this would have made the ship more susceptible to engineering casualties, hull damage, and the separation of pipes that weren't addressed by the captain. Now, obviously, any of these things could be possible, but the real reason is unknown. And again, no trace of the ship or anyone on board has ever been found.
That's wild.
Right. To this day, the disappearance of the USS Cyclops resulted in the single most largest loss of life in U.S. naval history outside of combat. 292 people were lost when the Cyclops disappeared. And no one has any idea what happened. Yeah. Now, the USS Cyclops had three sister ships, and each one of them faced a similar fate. So we have the USS Proteus, I think that's how you say it. This ship was sold on March 8, 1941 to the Canadian Merchant Navy, and it embarked on the exact same route as the Cyclops and was also lost at sea without any trace sometime after November 25, 1941. Then the USS Norris was in service as a shipping vessel for the Aluminum Company of Canada on February 27, 1941. And after leaving the port, headed for St. Thomas sometime after December 10th, she was lost to sea and never seen again. The last one, so the last of the sister ships is the USS Jupiter. This was converted to an aircraft carrier sometime between 1920 and 1922. And then it was recommissioned as the USS Langley. This was the first American aircraft carrier and was vital in developing the U.S. naval aviation capabilities. This ship was stationed in the Philippines in December of 1941, where she departed from, headed for Australia following the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. But on February 27, 1942, while ferrying fighter planes to Southeast Asia, she was attacked by a Japanese aircraft, being hit by five bombs, causing major damage. After the surviving crew were rescued, the ship was scuttled by torpedoes and then fired by escorting destroyers. So, okay. The last one was destroyed in a normal, you know, non-paranormal military way. But it's odd that all four of these sister ships were either lost to war or some kind of mysterious thing all within the Bermuda Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Super weird. So the next one, I love the name of this one. I just love it. The SS Witchcraft.
Oh, shit. That's a good one.
It just fits the whole thing. So this one was a personal ship. It had two people on board, Dan Burke and Father Patrick Horgan. The two men took the boat off the coast of Miami in December to see the Christmas lights on the city skyline. But when they got into the sea, something stopped the boat. It just died. So the men said that they had radioed around 9 p.m. that they had hit something, but they weren't taking on any water. So like it wasn't a big major emergency. But they were now stuck in the dark ocean. Now, at 9:03 p.m., the Coast Guard was headed that way. But by the time they got there, which was 9:19 p.m., there was nothing there. The Coast Guard used their searchlights and searched 1,200 square miles, and they found nothing.
That's crazy.
Now, this boat was said to be unsinkable, right? So this boat was said to be unsinkable, and not unsinkable like Titanic unsinkable. It could be damaged. It could take on water, but the material in which it was made of was strong enough to keep it from capsizing, which means it wouldn't sink under the water. So somehow, in only 16 minutes, the boat and both men vanished without a trace and were never heard from again.
That's wild.
16 minutes. Right?
Hmm.
So now the next ship has been studied for years, and no one has ever been able to come up with an answer. And that is the Mary Celeste. So the captain of this ship was Benjamin Briggs, and by 1872, he had been a captain for a very long time, and he decided that he was going to become a businessman. He got married, became a father, settled down, starting a whole new chapter in his life. But when he seen that the Mary Celeste was for sale, it seemed to call to him, and he couldn't resist buying it. Now, this ship was originally built in 1861, but it had just had $10,000 worth of renovations done to it. This was a 100-foot-long ship made of solid cedar wood and weighed about 282 tons, so it's a massive ship. This was a merchant ship which hauled anything that you bought, sold, or traded locally to international places. A wine merchant had hired Benjamin and his ship to bring 1,700 barrels of alcohol to Guiana, Italy. Once they loaded up, they left port, making a pit stop in New York to pick up Benjamin's wife and his 2-year-old daughter. One morning in November of 1872, Captain Briggs, his family, and 7 crewmen boarded the Mary Celeste, ready to head out from New York. Benjamin's first mate was Albert. The second crewman was Andrew, and then the ship's steward was Edward, and then they had 4 German seamen aboard as well. Each of these men, including the captain, had great reputations, and they were described as peaceful and first-class sailors. They were not drunks. They didn't do any kind of drugs like many sailors did at the time. They were just a bunch of straight-laced, experienced guys. Now, this journey should have only taken a few weeks, but the weather was rough, and by the end of November, they were still sailing towards Italy. This is wintertime, not the best time to be sailing around the world. Now, a few days into the journey, something seemed to happen to the Mary Celeste. So it's December 5th, and a British captain named Morehouse was sailing his ship to Portugal. He went up to the top deck to kind of check things out, and when he looked out, he saw something. The fog clears away, and he realizes that he's looking at a ship. But it's not just any ship, it's the Mary Celeste. As he watches the ship, he can tell that something's not right because it's just moving all over the place. As they got closer to the Mary Celeste, he and his crew could see that the sails were all messed up. They were facing the wrong direction, and some of them were even missing. As they continued to get closer to the Mary Celeste, you know, the men are waving their arms, like jumping up and down, yelling, trying to get the attention of somebody on board. So that way they could be like, hey, do you need help? Like, what's happening over there? But they don't get any kind of response. And as this goes on, the captain realizes that the Mary Celeste had left the New York port 8 days prior to this. So it should not have been sitting in the middle of Portugal waters. This was when they all realized that something was very, very wrong. So Captain Morehouse sends a few of his guys over to investigate. 2 of these guys get into a raft, they paddle over, and they climb aboard the Mary Celeste. They look around and they don't see anyone. The entire ship was empty.
That's crazy.
Right? Now, right away, they noticed that there were 2 hatch doors. And knowing that these doors led to the bottom of the ship, they opened it thinking that, you know, maybe somebody's down here and they need help. So they went below deck and all they find is a few feet of water. That's it. So from here, they go into the captain's room where they find a sword under his bed and the ship's log. So the last entry was made on November 25th, 9 days before the ship was found. And when you're on a ship, you update, like the captain updates the log every single day, sometimes right. More than once in a day. So this entry did not mention anything about a storm, any kind of problems, nothing. The last entry said that the weather was good and everything was fine. So Briggs had noted their location was 400 nautical miles away from where the ship had currently sat. So 9 days before the ship was found, they were only 400 nautical miles from where they currently were, which is not where they should have been in 9 days.
Mm-mm.
Right. So nothing's adding up. So after this, the seamen realized that the Mary Celeste lifeboats were missing. So they were like, okay, maybe they got caught up in a storm and, you know, they just had to abandon ship. But there was a couple problems with this. The storm was not mentioned in the log, and they didn't take anything on board with them. Yeah. So there are some theories out there about what happened and why these 9 people just vanished. So first is that a storm rolled in out of nowhere and it forced the ship off course and could have caused the captain to tell everyone on board to abandon it. But it doesn't really make sense because there was nothing physically wrong with the Mary Celeste besides the sails. and they took no food, nothing with them. So the next is, it's way out there. Okay, and you're gonna be all, oh God, again, because it's way out there. Some people think that a giant sea monster rose from the depths of the ocean and just swallowed everybody.
God, that's so dumb.
Now, just during this time that this happened, this belief was common. A lot of people believed in sea monsters. And if there was no other explanation, it's like the aliens of today. If there's no other explanation, it was sea monsters. So it's not really a surprise. But if a sea monster would have rose up and just ate everybody, the ship would have been destroyed.
Right.
So, not what happened. Now, the next theory, I love it. I don't know how true it is, okay? But either way, I love it. This theory is pirates.
Oh, nice.
Like, I think of, like, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
So, during this time, pirates were a real threat to everyone, especially merchant ships. The pirates would shoot at your ship, jump on board, rob you, kill the captain, you know, take over the ship, all of that. But I don't think that's what happened. Despite how much I love it, I do not think that's what happened. Because why would they abandon the ship instead of taking it? Because aside from all the wine on board, which was very valuable, the ship itself would have been a huge payday. There was about $30,000 worth of alcohol alone on the ship, which today would be about $790,470. $87
shit
on board just in alcohol.
Right, that's a lot.
Yeah. So for the pirates, this would have been a huge payday. So why would they just abandon it?
Mm-hmm.
Now this is what Captain Morehouse believed happened. Okay, when they discovered the ship was abandoned and just hanging out in Portugal, once they were done looking at the ship, his crew had brought the Mary Celeste to a port city that was nearby. And while there, British authorities had questioned Morehouse because it was odd that he just happened upon this valuable ship in the middle of the ocean. Then, on top of this, by the time Morehouse had turned the ship in, 9 of those barrels of wine were empty. So the British authorities had plenty of reasons to be suspicious. But in the end, they give Morehouse and his crew a compensation prize for hauling the ship to shore. They're like, here you go, you're clear, go about your day. So we have one, and that's it. That's that one. They have no idea what happened to these people. They just were gone. Yep. No trace of them. Just vanished.
That's insane.
Right. Like, it's nuts. An entire ship of people just
gone. Bye.
Right, exactly. Just see you later. So we have one last ship to talk about. This one, people might know pretty well because it's a big one. So in 1921, a commercial ship arrived to the shores of North Carolina. It was in good condition. Nothing appeared to be wrong with it. But when people boarded the ship, they discovered that every single member aboard the vessel had vanished. This is the tale of a ghost ship.
Nice.
The Carol A. Deering. We got a little bit of everything when it comes to the Bermuda Triangle, okay? We got aliens, pirates, ghost ship, disappearances. We got it all. So there are many reasons out there to what happened. Some believe the sailors were kidnapped or they abandoned ship. Some believe that they had suffered some kind of mutiny, while others believed that it was more of a paranormal type of disappearance. So the Carol A. Deering was manned by 12 men. And based on its route, they were headed home when they vanished and were never seen again. So, it's January 1st of 1921. So, we're going to jump in our Wayback Machine here for this last one. Go back in time. A Coast Guard ship was doing its round in Cape Hatteras, just off the Hatteras Island in North Carolina. So, this area is known for its rough weather and choppy waters. So much so that it's known as the Graveyard of the Atlantic.
Hmm.
And then even today in 2025, the Coast Guard is pretty active in this area, looking, you know, for ships that have been capsized and all of that. Now, this January morning, they were doing, you know, their normal thing. When around 6 a.m., they spot a schooner, which is a way to describe a ship with 2 or more sails. Which is just a very large ship. From their distance, they couldn't tell what the name of the ship was, but they could tell that the ship had run aground and was clearly in distress. That is... does not mean that there was actually anything wrong with the ship. Cape Hatteras is full of shallow water and underwater sandbars, and it's typically known as the Diamond Shoals. And just because your ship ends up here does not mean that something's wrong. You're probably just stuck. And that was the case here. This ship was just simply stuck in a sandbar. Now, to make things worse, a storm was headed inland, and the water was getting pretty choppy. But around 10 a.m., the Coast Guard decided that they had to do something before the weather got worse. So they launched a few of those small rowboats to get across the water to the ship, but the wind and waves kept driving them back towards shore and away from the ship. So it takes about an hour and a half to get close enough to the ship so that way they can see anything. And what they see raises some concerns. All the lifeboats were missing. And at this point, all they can really say is the crew is missing, but they can't get close enough to make their way on board. So they can't say anything more than that. But it's possible that someone is down underneath the ship, you know, under deck, just hunkered in there. But they can't get on board, so the Coast Guard decided to call the rescue and return the next day. Because without seeing anyone in danger and needing help right away, there's no point in them putting their lives at risk. So the following day, the weather isn't any better, and they still can't get to the ship. So some of the officials send a telegram out asking another ship nearby called the Seminole if they could stop by the shoals and see if they could help the grounded vessel. If nothing else, they hope that the Seminole can at least figure out what the hell is going on. So the captain got his orders about 10:30 a.m. on February 1st. It takes about a day for them to arrive at Cape Hatteras, and they start looking around. Him and his crew can only see one other ship. But they're like, it's in good condition. Looks like it's working. So he doesn't think this is the wrecked ship that the telegram had talked about. So he kept sailing, looking for an actual shipwreck. Finally, he reports back to the Coast Guard that he can't find a schooner in distress and that he only found one ship in perfect condition. And his contact's like, yeah, dude, that's the one that you're supposed to rescue. So now by this time, by all of, you know, all this is figured out, the weather's gotten worse, and it's not safe for them to get back on track to get to the Carol A. Daring. So again, the ship is stuck and out of luck. Didn't just abandon the So they know that sailors don't just abandon a perfectly functioning ship. But the Seminole's captain can't see anything that's obviously wrong. So they're like, what the hell is happening here? Almost a week goes by before the weather calms down enough for them to be able to get to the ship. So they know this ship is there, but they just, a whole week, they can't do nothing about it. So now during this week, the Coast Guard also gets some information that makes this entire thing even weirder than it already is. So the higher-ups check around to see if anyone sent any kind of distress call, and they find out there was nothing ever sent. Not any Maydays or SOS calls within the past week. And obviously, if they did in fact leave in those missing rowboats, they would have turned up somewhere by now. But there wasn't any sign of anyone anywhere on the surrounding area that any crew or rowboats had showed up, dead or alive. So at this point, the Coast Guard is just like, you know, we're not going to get any answers until we get on board of that ship and search it. So around 8:30 on February 4th, the ocean was calm enough for them to send out a crew that was able to get close enough to identify it. And across the side of the vessel, the words Carol A. Daring was painted. So they know this ship is an American coal hauling schooner, and it's owned by a Maine-based company called the G.G. Daring Company. The ship was supposed to be making, like I said earlier, a routine run from Brazil to Virginia, and it had a small crew of about 12 men. Less than a month before the ship was found, so in January, the ship made its last scheduled stop in Barbados and then departed. So it being there in Cape Hatteras made sense because this was on their way to Virginia. But what didn't make sense was how it ended up abandoned and in the shoals of this North Carolina island. Now, eventually the rescue crew was able to get on board the Daring. And just as the team earlier said, the lifeboats were missing. And there was no one on board. But they found something very odd and very creepy. Food. Sitting out on plates was half-eaten food, dirty dishes still on the stove, And there was food set out on the stove. It looked as if the crew had been in the middle of eating their meal when they vanished.
That's wild.
Like they were there 1 minute and then gone the next.
Right.
On February 4th, 1921, the Coast Guard fully searched the Carol A. Deering and they confirmed it to be abandoned. They found no person and no lifeboat. All they found was that food still sitting on plates and in the pots and pans.
That's wild.
Right? Isn't that creepy?
Mm-hmm.
There were ribs, pea soup, and coffee, all just sitting there waiting to be eaten and drank. And even stranger, some reports say that the rescue crew noticed that the stove was still warm, even though the ship had been sitting in this exact spot for at least a week. So this suggested that the crew went missing recently, but the other rooms on the ship suggested otherwise. They couldn't find any personal possessions of anyone that was on the ship. It looked as though the crew took their time to pack their things because it was organized. It didn't look as though the ship had been ransacked. So it didn't look as though they left in a rush, which is the complete opposite of what the kitchen showed. And then the Deering crew had left their kittens behind, but they did manage to take their navigational equipment with them, like maps, charts, all the tools that they would need to navigate, all of it gone. This to the rescue crew was a good sign. This suggested that when the crew abandoned ship, they thought about it. Someone had brought the navigational equipment with them so they could safely make their way to shore. But this didn't explain where they ended up or why they had abandoned the ship to begin with.
Right.
Eventually, an eyewitness comes forward because the ship had been sighted 2 days before it ran aground. And the details of this sighting led to more questions than it gave answers. On January 29th, the Deering had been about 100 miles south of Cape Hatteras in another part of North Carolina known as Cape Lookout. Here, they had sailed past one of the Cape Lookout's light ships, which a light ship is basically like a mobile lighthouse. It just kind of sails around the area where there isn't a lighthouse, lighting up the dangerous and choppy waters so other boats can see it. Now, the Deering and the light ship pass each other, and they come pretty close. Close enough that the light ship crew could see what was going on aboard the Deering. They said they spotted about 12 men on board, and typically, a size this ship, these men would be very busy. It's a large ship, a very small crew. But that's not what was happening. It looked as though one man was doing all of the work while all the rest were just hanging out. This guy appeared to be doing all of the work, then picked up a megaphone and started shouting at the lightship crew. They said that he spoke in broken English and had a very strong accent that sounded like it was Scandinavian, but they weren't 100% sure. So this man with the megaphone had told them that they had just sailed through a storm, and even though the ship was intact, they had lost their anchors and their radio, and the man needed to notify their boss at GG Deering Company. So he asked if someone on the lightship could contact the company and then let them know that they needed their anchors replaced. But the crew on the lightship, who would have normally helped, couldn't, because at that moment, their radio was broken as well.
Oh, damn.
So, so funny. So the man that they thought was the Scandinavian man seemed to be unbothered. He's like, okay, no problem. I'll just find somebody else that can help. And then they just sailed their separate ways. Then 2 days later, the Deering showed up on the sandbar in Cap Hatteras. So at this point, no one knows anything. They have no idea what happened. They don't know why the crew abandoned ship or where they were now. But as normal, theories and rumors began to circulate. So all through the little villages and then up and down the coast, people everywhere had ideas to what happened. And then journalists got their hands on these stories and all the speculation because, you know, it's what they do. So some people suggest that the crew of Deering had staged a mutiny and maybe killed their captain and then panicked when they realized what they had done and that they would be tried for murder as soon as they got back to shore. So rather than face the consequences, they fled the ship. Okay, sounds good. Possible. But when the rescue team was searching the ship, they had come across the captain's logbook and the entries from January 23rd. And in it appeared to be a different handwriting than the ones before that day.
Huh.
So it looks as though someone else had taken over the captain's duties for some reason. Then They found signs that someone else had been sleeping in the captain's quarters other than the captain. So in his quarters, there was a spare bed, and it was unmade as if someone had recently slept in it. But the captain's bed was perfectly made. Then the rescue team had found some of the navigational equipment in the captain's personal bathroom, which is obviously not where this stuff should be.
Right.
So some people think that if the official navigator had taken over the captain's duties, then maybe he placed this stuff in the bathroom as extra storage space.
Could have been.
But why do you need to put that in the storage? But why, if you're not sleeping in the bed, why don't you put it on the bed?
Right. That is true.
Why in the where are you going to go to the bathroom at?
Right.
So then another piece that could support the mutiny theory happened about a month before the Carol A. Daring was abandoned. So I mentioned earlier that the Daring had stopped in Barbados on its way home. It picked up supplies, all of that. During this stop, the captain, Willis Rommel, had a conversation with a buddy at this port. And according to the captain, his first mate, Charles B. McClellan, was a big problem. He said Charles drank too much, that he was verbally abusive, and nobody on the crew could stand him. Which, well.
Right.
Okay, which he could have just been venting, right? Whatever. But right as Captain Rommel was done complaining about his first mate and his temper, Charles showed up completely drunk, and he was so unruly and out of control that he picked a fight with the captain in public. Charles ranted in front of everyone about how the captain was a micromanager who wouldn't let him do his job. Charles also said that the captain was bad at navigating, so he always had to step in and do his job for him. So I'm like, damn. So now we don't know who was in the wrong or who was in the right, but we do know that the Barbados police ended up arresting Charles. And at some point during all of this, Charles had even threatened Captain Rommel, saying, quote, "I'll get the captain before we get to Norfolk. I will."
Crazy.
So for this, for this, Charles ended up sitting in jail for nearly a month. He was in there until January 9th when Captain Rommel bailed him out. This guy's threatened to kill you and you're going to go to jail and bail him out.
Mm-hmm.
So Charles could have gotten the crew to mutiny against the captain. They could have fought back. They both could have died. One could have died. We have no idea. All that is known. Okay. All I know is that this one's hard for me to believe. Okay. This next one I'm not completely convinced of either. So, Jesus Christ, as with most of these ghost ships, pirates are a big theory to what happened. It's possible that pirates took control of the ship, then forced everyone on board to abandon the ship, but they would have kept the ship. They would have eaten the food at the very least. So, pirate attacks were bad during this time. Accounts of pirates were all throughout the newspapers, especially after April of 1921, which was 3 months after the Daring had been found. This was when a man named Christopher Gray found a message in a bottle on a North Carolina beach. Inside the note read, quote, "Daring captured by oil burning boat." Christopher passed this message along to authorities who launched a huge investigation. They believed the phrase "oil burning boat" meant a ship that ran in oil rather than coal or sails. So they looked through all of the records for oil burning ships that could have any connection to pirate ships. It took 5 more months before the conclusion of this was shared, and it took everything in a completely new direction, shining an entirely different light on the investigation. The man that found the message in the bottle, Christopher Gray, was a U.S. Navy veteran, but by this time he was retired and working as a fisherman. But his dream job was to be a lighthouse keeper. But there was a problem. There was not any openings for this job, and he knew that if one opened, he would be very qualified for the position. This would not happen, though, until someone quit or someone was fired. And he was not going to sit around and wait for the job to disappear. He decided that it was time for him to take fate into his own hands and ensure that he got the job of his dreams. He was going to force someone out of their job. And to do that, he thought he would embarrass the local lighthouse keepers because they missed a key piece of evidence in this big mystery, but he had been the one to find it. So hoping that as a result, someone would be fired or would quit, he planted a message in a bottle and just happened to stumble upon it. Desperate times. So it said that Christopher's daughter was the one that exposed this entire thing.
How fucked up is that?
Right.
Right.
So she went to the government investigators, and then when they compared the handwriting on the note to Christopher's handwriting on some papers that he had filled out while he was in the Navy, the samples were an exact match. And then when he was confronted, he admitted to the entire fraud. Now, this doesn't mean the whole pirate thing isn't true. But again, why would they leave the ship but force everyone off of it? It makes no sense, and I'm not convinced of it. But there is one detail that I have yet to mention, and it's the reason this ship is in our episode today. During the Carol A. Daring's final voyage, the ship passed right through the Bermuda Triangle after it left Barbados.
Nice.
Yep. So, what happened to the Carol A. Daring after the investigation? It's not really all that important, but I think it, you know, it's just a fun little sprinkle in there. So, once they were done searching it, they decided to simply just destroy it.
Damn.
Yep. Which, it is more practical and cheaper than trying to dig it out of 14 feet of sand that's in the middle of the ocean and then have to repair the shawl. So they just blew it up with dynamite. Yeah. So some of the pieces settled into the shallow water just off the shore of North Carolina. And for 30 years following this, divers and even sailors could still see some of the planks just below the surface. Pieces still get washed up on shore today. And even today, you can actually see parts of the ship in the graveyard of the Atlantic Museum. This includes the ship's bell, a flask, and a steam-powered windlass. And then, just before, this wasn't the only ship to be found abandoned, like it was and left as a ghost ship. In 1840, a British trading ship named Rosalie was found floating inside the triangle, but there was no damage and all goods were accounted for, but the crew had vanished with no sign of them ever being found. And these disappearances still happen today, like I said earlier. In fact, 10 years ago, as of the 24th, two 14-year-old boys went out on a sailing trip together without adult supervision. This was Austin Stefanos and Perry Cohen. We have no idea where they were planning to go, but either way, they went out without permission and did not tell anyone. The boys had grown up in Florida together, so they knew the waters well, but they went out and were never seen again.
Holy shit.
The following March, the sailboat was found floating empty inside the Bermuda Triangle with only one thing in the boat. Austin's cell phone, and then I guess a few other personal possessions, but I didn't see what those were. To this day, no one knows what happened to those boys, but one popular theory is that the ship capsized long enough for the boys to fall overboard and drown. But wouldn't the phone and personal items have fallen into the water too?
You would think so.
Right. And where are their bodies?
Right.
So now today there are less incidents reported of anything or anyone going missing from the triangle. The numbers have significantly gone down since the 60s and 70s, but either way, it's a huge mystery and no one knows what's going on here. More than 50 ships, 20 planes, and over 1,000 people have mysteriously disappeared or died, leaving no trace of them ever being found.
That's wild.
Right? That's a lot of fucking people and a lot of ships and a lot of planes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, this kills me. Everyone wants to know what's in outer space. Everyone wants to go to Mars and wants to go to all these other planets so bad. We have a shit ton of mysteries right here on Earth. There are tons of places that have never been explored, people have never seen, places that have never been touched by any person on Earth. Let's focus on that and what's happening right here on our planet and solve some of these mysteries, and then maybe we can go and explore the atmosphere. Like, Mars is covered in red dirt. The moon is covered in craters. Mystery solved. Let's focus on what the hell is happening here on Earth. Because we got people just vanishing in the middle of the fucking ocean with no explanation. I feel like that's more important.
Yeah.
Just saying. All right. So that's it. There it is.
The Bermuda Triangle.
Yep. I think this episode serves a reminder to us all that there are a ton of uncomfortable truths, and even though the answer may seem close, the real answer and some solutions will always just be out of reach.
That's true.
And that's it for that one.
Nice.
Yep. A lot of people just vanished.
I know.
Like, it's like, where did these people go? They're just gone.
Crazy.
Right? How does an entire ship of people just disappear, but then the ship show up?
Right.
That's odd. Okay. Anyway, that's it. We're not going to solve this one today.
No.
Next week is one similar to this, but we're going to be back on dry land for that one.
Okay. Should be interesting.
Yep. Everybody can put their water wings away. We're done. There was, I'll have to find it and I'll send it to you because I really couldn't find anything on it. But somebody had told me that with the Atlantis one, that you remember the Kelpies from our fairy episode?
Mm-hmm.
That Atlanteans use Kelpies to drag people into the water to then become citizens.
Oh, shit.
Right? I couldn't really find anything on it. I'm going to do some more digging for when we do the Atlantis to see if I can find it. Maybe I just didn't look in the right places. But I was like, that's weird. Right.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on the list. I'm going to cover it at some point. I'm just not sure when.
All right.
Because we got all of our spooky episodes coming up.
I know.
All right. That's all we got. You got anything?
No, ma'am.
All right. After our long day, I think that's it.
I know. I'm done.
I know. I'm ready for bed. All right. Well, guys, that's it. Come back next Monday for that next episode. Make sure you give us a rate, a review, subscribe. I've got some pictures for this episode. They'll be on Facebook. That link's in the description as always. And we'll be back next week for another one. So we hope you keep listening. And remember to
watch for monsters.
And don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.